in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Welcome back to Phantom Island. My name is Stephen Godfrey. That is Ryan Nanny, and we are still smack dab in the middle of what has been a very, very tumultuous and eventful college football carousel season. We'll call it a season. Feels like longer than a season.
It's like one of the seasons of life.
Yeah.
Not one of the calendar seasons.
When God wins my time. Accordingly, today's
Hold on. What else are we? What else are we?
Well, we're brought to you by Homefield. Yeah. I was going to get there.
Okay.
I was going to get
All
there.
Right. God.
Come on, Mom. I can do this.
Sorry.
We are brought to you by our wonderful friends at Homefield, who are, they're the inventors and proprietors of wonderful collegiate sports apparel.
Uh-huh.
They are also partially responsible for the juggernaut that is the number one football team in the land, the Indiana Hoosiers.
Name another number one football team in FBS. Can't do it.
You think they go by Hoosh ever?
Or I don't I just, think so. I think that's
I just
you.
Kind of try and pull that one
it's
off.
It's okay. It's good to try new things.
Slyly pull that one
no
off.
No bad ideas.
Okay. All right. I also want to mention right up front, you can support this program because this is the kind of show we would normally do behind our paywall at phantomisland.show where you can become a subscriber today by going to phantomisland.show and signing up for as little as $10 a month or $100 annually. So we do a lot of our sort of advanced reporting and, you know, gossip and like the hardcore sicko level type college football stuff. But this one, today's show kind of bled out of what normally would be that type of content.
So it's a little bit of a hybrid. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to plug our paid stuff at the jump. So if you like this, boy, do we have more of this for you.
And also, when you are a paid subscriber at phantomisland.show, you're supporting the whole thing. You may notice that we don't run ads other than for our presenting sponsor, Homefield Apparel.
Number one, Indiana football go.
Do you know why you're not hearing 18 ads for where best place to put your job post? I don't have any job postings to put. Yeah. I don't need to know. Like, the reason you're not getting inundated with advertisements by us is because of the generous support of all of our paid members for everything we do. The free stuff, the behind the paywall stuff, the special stuff, all of it.
You know, that being said, we might have more advertisers here one day. So
we might.
Counterintuitive
business
strategy there,
Ryan. But we try to be thoughtful about it. That's all.
I tell you what, a little behind the scenes look here at Phantom Island's day-to-day operations.
Oh, boy.
Sure did stop posting our show links on LinkedIn. You were talking about
maybe I'll do a post bomb at some point.
It is the weirdest place in the world.
I love LinkedIn. God. Did you see? I don't want to completely derail us, but there was a really wonderful piece of LinkedIn brain last week, I think.
Yeah.
That was like, pretty soon there will be no need to pay these coaches, the Lane Kiffins of the world, tens of millions
of dollars. It was a Lane Kiffin adjacent topic, which is what we're about to do. Yeah.
You can't spell Lane Kiffin without AI.
AI, baby. Okay, Ryan, I'm going to play you a little clip here from Lane Kiffin.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Lane Kiffin today. We're going to talk about Lane Kiffin continuing a trend I've noticed. Because three's a trend, baby.
Three is a trend.
Each one of these incidents that we've talked about, because I was raised by a bunch of cops and come from a long line of cops, this topic today has always been close to my heart in sort of a derisive manner. Today we're going to talk about why do college football coaches claim they have suffered potentially criminal acts when they can't prove it. We'll work on that question, okay? We're going to workshop it a little
bit. Sure, yeah. But
I want to play you a clip real fast. We're about to insert it. This is Lane Kiffin talking about what happened to him as he was leaving Oxford en route to become LSU's next head coach.
You're with your son and you're driving and, you know, you got to call a cop that you know, so they'll help you because you personally know him because you are leaving the state. And you got to call him because, you know, you drive with your son and you got to turn around and people are like screaming at you, you know, trying to run you off the road. I don't know what they're going to do.
That is harrowing. Ryan Nanny, how dare those horrible people in Mississippi run him off the road?
I wanna do a little bit of a little bit of CYA here, if that's okay.
Okay.
So This is a good recent example. This is from November of 2025, where a grand jury indicted, I believe, a man living in Texas for sending violent threats to Jeff Brohm, his family, his coaching staff, and Miller Moss, or at least was sending them to Brohm about all of these people.
Louisville head coach and quarterback.
Yes. Where he sent several messages saying, I'll just quote them. They are redacted in what I have seen here, so I don't know what they literally said. You'll see what I mean. Quote, mark my words, I am going to kill you and your entire expletive family, you piece of expletive. I'm going to spend the rest of my life making yours miserable. Here's where it comes into play. You'll see why. You cost me $80,000 last night. You can either pay me or suffer the consequences. Redacted. They will all suffer. Like, I'm not making light of this. This is a fucked up thing to receive.
Yeah.
In light of losing a football game. I believe this is, this is after they lost to Cal.
I just think that there was a man in Texas who thought there's absolutely no way Louisville should lose to a college football team from Berkeley.
Yeah.
I think it was politically motivated. Yeah.
I think it was motivated by something. I don't think it was necessarily politics.
He got mad. The libs owned him.
There is a lot of times I think I look at being a college football coach and say, like, hey, shut up. You're rich. You shouldn't, like, yeah, yeah. You got to deal with media criticism, fan criticism. Like, yeah, you're going to have, mm-hmm. there is a cost to all of this. Shit like this obviously is way over the line.
Yeah.
And I don't want to suggest that this doesn't happen, because I'm sure that it happened to Jeff Brohm. It happened to Jeff Brohm to the point where prosecutors felt comfortable indicting someone and like digging up the records to say, like, yeah, here's what happened here. So that said, that's not what we're not here to talk about Jeff Brohm.
We sure aren't. And I appreciate you playing a little CYA on behalf of Phantom Island Industries. What we're here to talk about today is the exact opposite of that situation.
Yes.
We're going to start with Lane Kiffin and his claim that you just heard earlier that he was that someone tried to run him off the road in Oxford, Mississippi, after it has become public knowledge, finally, I might add, after the way Lane Kiffin had orchestrated this entire saga, that he was leaving Ole Miss to become the head coach at LSU. All right. I'm now going to read the first couple graphs from a news story from Mississippi Today, which is a Pulitzer Prize winning nonprofit news outlet in the state of Mississippi. By one Taylor Vance. If you are so inclined to go donate and help support the efforts of nonprofit Pulitzer Prize winning news, I highly recommend the fine folks at Mississippi Today, a few of whom I know personally. Taylor writes in his lead. Get ready, Ryan. This is really going to shock you.
Okay.
There is no evidence that a driver tried to run former Ole Miss football coach Lane Kiffin off the road while he was on his way to the Oxford airport to accept a new head coaching gig at rival Louisiana State University, according to state and local law enforcement agencies. Kiffin announced last week that he was leaving Mississippi's flagship university after helping it clinch a spot in the playoffs for the first time in program history. He said in a Monday press conference in Baton Rouge that an angry Rebel fan tried to run him off the road while he was driving with his son Knox to the airport in Oxford. Bailey Holloway, a spokesman for the Mississippi Department of Public Safety, told Mississippi Today that Kiffin had a safety escort from the Mississippi Highway Patrol when he traveled to the airport. The agency's officers have no record of an automobile trying to push the football coach's car off the highway, or sorry, off the roadway, Holloway added. This was such an open and shut case of a falsified claim, Ryan. Did you know this? I don't know if you've seen the video. We're not going to include this, but I do want to mention this. The DPS, Department of Public Safety Commissioner, is a guy named Sean Tindell. He weighed in on this situation by posting a satirical social media video on Tuesday night. In the video, Tindell wore a visor, something Kiffin is known for wearing, and walked a dog on a leash. Tindall said the pet was not even his dog, a reference lingering to questions about Juice Kiffin, a dog that has become the unofficial mascot of sorts at Ole Miss. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
Please go support MississippiToday.org if you feel so inclined. Thank you for the good journalism there.
I have seen that video. Our mutual friend Alex McDaniel was the one who sent it to me.
Of course. It's hard to talk about any one piece of the recent Lane Kiffin saga without trying to sort of like feeling the need to pull all the exposition in. But today we don't need to talk about Lane Kiffin as
a special boy,
egomaniacal, possibly sociopathic little special boy that he is, or his weird tendencies in public. We just have to talk about one thing, which is that Lane Kiffin, amidst all the other drama that was going around, and all of us in humanity would argue and point directly at Lane Kiffin being the author of the stakes, of the timing, and of the intensity of said drama.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin, as Lane Kiffin is wont to do, refocused everything that was going on about Lane Kiffin to make Lane Kiffin look like a sympathetic character in this particular story, which is really, really hard to do in this case.
In multiple ways. Like, everyone wanted me to coach this team in the playoff, but gosh darn it, they just wouldn't let me.
Yeah. So one of the devices Lane Kiffin adopted to try and build up some sort of sympathy for himself publicly was to claim that an angry Ole Miss fan somehow identified him on a road. By the way, I have most of a map of Oxford, Mississippi still in my mind's eye.
Yeah.
Because I lived there for so long. I know exactly how to get to the airport from the area of town in which Lane Kiffin lives in. This scenario is entirely implausible. It wouldn't have happened. And also, one of the things that jumped out at me, because I was raised by cops, specifically I was raised by a retired FBI agent who taught firearms tactics and was a leader of a SWAT unit based out of headquarters. It's called WFO, Washington Field Office. Trying to run someone off the road is actually very hard to do. It's nearly impossible. You either succeed or you don't attempt it. Because the average human being, especially driving on any kind of state road or highway, is at a certain miles per hour where any intervention of another vehicle, which is what Lane Kiffin is claiming at the time, would almost certainly result in either a full stoppage of the car or some sort of single or two car accident.
Yeah.
It's almost...
It's not like the movies where you sort of like bang up against each other for a few times and then evade. It's like, oh, you hit me once and now I'm...
And now I'm in the ditch. My car's rolled. I've gone into a ravine or something like that. And this is not tongue in cheek. This is me being very honest here. The most common maneuver in this that police use is a pit maneuver, which is where you try to disable a in motion, usually speeding car that's evading pursuit. The idea that Lane Kiffin was nearly run off the road, or that someone tried to run off the road, inherently implies, and this was pointed out to me by police, that Lane Kiffin knows how to evade that type of maneuver. This is unlikely, my friends.
Okay.
That in his free time, Lane Kiffin is probably not taking military or federal police level vehicle evasion maneuvering.
Okay. I kind of hope he is, though.
I know. Wouldn't it be great?
He is.
This is the Fast and the Furious movie that would actually get me into the franchise.
That's right.
So, ha ha ha, very silly. Oh, that Lane Kiffin, he's such a card, right? This is where I would mention the episode stops, because Lane Kiffin is a very singular individual, and this story has become so big.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you a quick anecdote before I move on, because guess what? Our episode doesn't stop. All of the various little sub-chapters and anecdotes in the Lane Kiffin saga of 2025, then when paired with the Lane Kiffin saga that goes back to USC and the Raiders and Tennessee, etc., it does make a sort of very bespoke, non-traditional. It's a profile of a very aberrant human being relative to the rank and file of head coaches. So,
okay.
In other words, what I'm trying to say is, like, this is a unique instance, right? Right?
Yeah. I think if we want to not, I understand the zag that you're throwing me here. I do think a lot of the analysis about what is wrong or screwy about college football that is filtered through the lens of things Lane Kiffin does.
Yeah.
Fails to account for, like, the Lane Kiffin-ness of it.
Correct.
That's Lane Kiffin does things in a way that are, in many cases, unique to him. But I think the thing you're about to throw at me, although I suspect we're going to stop for a second here and talk about our aforementioned friends from Homefield, is that maybe this isn't just a Lane Kiffin specialty.
But first, let's talk about those aforementioned, now mentioned.
Now mentioned.
Not afore, pro, pre-mentioned friends at home field. We're good at English.
I don't know if you noticed, but college football playoff selection this season has been very feelings heavy. Notre Dame is having a lot of public feelings, like on an institutional level. And as a result, so is most of the ACC. depending on how you feel about Alabama getting in, there's a lot of feelings going around that whole thing. And we even have room for anger at Group of Five champions Tulane and JMU. Not me. I don't have that anger. Maybe we're mad at Duke? I don't think anyone's that mad at Duke, except, of course, for UVA fans. But at home field, there's a spot for all these schools and plenty more. The playoff only wants you if you have a good season, or if you belong to the right conference, or if you have the right brand name or public campaigning. Not home field. Oklahoma State, you had one of your most unpleasant years. Doesn't matter. You're a home field school. UNC, we talk so much shit about you and your choices. Oh, what's this? The committee has decided you are still in at home field. Florida, Auburn, Kentucky, Arkansas, LSU, you were nowhere near the playoff. Home field welcomes you all the same. Go to homefieldapparel.com today, find your school, and behold all the shirts, crewnecks, sweatshirts, hats, jackets, and so forth that you can acquire without even being asked what your school's record against ranked opponents was this year. Okay, back to the show.
Okay, Ryan, before we move on,
yeah,
the reason why I take everything that's Lane Kiffin related with a grain of salt when it comes to talking about college football,
mm-hmm.
I'll give you one quick anecdote. If you're a regular listener to this show, as you all should be at phantomisland.show, I had bronchitis last week, thanks to one of my children. Pick one, it doesn't matter. And I broke down and went to the doctor, which is something I rarely do. My doctor has never once, she's been my doctor for the 19 years that I've lived in Nashville. I think maybe 3 years ago, she found out what I did for a living.
Okay,
16 years in. She knows everything about, obviously, like my physical health.
Yeah.
Knows about my kids. My wife sees her as well. This is like a general practitioner.
Yeah.
I don't know if she knows what sports are or like it's just never even come up.
Right.
And she asked me very quickly as we were finishing up the exam. She's like, yeah, you got bronchitis. You need to do this. And then she stopped me on my way out and said, what do you think of Clark Lee?
Okay.
And I was like, Clark's great. Really nice guy, da 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 da. I should add here that my doctor, like when I go to the doctor, I go to Vanderbilt. I don't mm-hmm. go to the university. I don't go to the football stadium. Okay,
right.
For those of you who don't live in Nashville, Vanderbilt is a pretty big
it's
player
a big
in healthcare.
Health conglomerate. Yeah, yeah.
Giant healthcare.
Yeah.
Huge children's hospital. Huge regular hospital.
A lot of walking
research
clinics.
Hospital, and a lot of walking clinics yeah. for those of us who decided to breed.
Sure.
In the pandemic era. I went to, like, not even a walk-in clinic. I just went to a doctor's mm-hmm. office that's owned by Vanderbilt.
Yep.
So the reason she was asking, I guess, is, like, inside – Vanderbilt has a bunch of employees who aren't necessarily Vanderbilt sports fans, but Vanderbilt football this year, if you haven't noticed, has sort of eclipsed its usual status
yeah.
and become something bigger than that. So she just asked me out of the blue, what do you think of Clark Lee? And I said, well, he's staying. This was when he had just signed his extension.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's a really good guy, personally. And I've run into Clark. Like, our kids were on a sports team together last year, the year before. I can't remember. And I've talked about Clark on the show before. And that was it. And I'm like walking out of the exam room. And she says, not like that Lane Kiffin, right? And my mind was blown. Because this woman, I think my doctor, undergrad, she went to William & Mary, I believe. Or okay. she grew up near William
yeah.
& Mary. My doctor has, she has, this is the last person in the world you would probably be like, hey man, what's the line on the Giants game? Okay?
Right.
And somehow Lane Kiffin had broken through.
Sure.
And I have other anecdotes, so I won't drag the show down by mentioning them, where the Lane Kiffin story has broken contained. This happens once in a while, right? Deion Sanders is a great example of mm-hmm. this, where for a hot minute in the zeitgeist of American culture, something college football breaks way, way out of contain, where we're not just talking about something that like football fans know about or college football fans know about or SEC fans know about. We're talking about something that has entered the mainstream. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if there was, like, a Lane Kiffin joke on a late-night TV show somewhere that we didn't pick up. Although,
yeah.
I'm sure the internet would have found that and presented
sure.
it to us.
Sure.
That's the level that I'm talking about, Ryan.
I mean, my favorite example of this is from one of my favorite writers and sports people. So this is from a sports person,
mm-hmm.
but it's from David Roth of Defector.
Yeah.
David is great. But David is, in many ways, the, like...
David is not watching the Coastal Carolina-Georgia Southern game.
And I don't say that as a criticism. Like, David is a New Yorker who wants to talk about the Mets and why they're terrible yeah. and why he hates them and the Knicks. And, like,
yeah.
fits a lot of the sort of, like, what do New Yorkers care about
yeah.
when it comes to sports.
He writes a lot of politics. Like, this is... He's nowhere near college football.
This is... Yeah, and again, like, David is so talented and so nice and, like... I have nothing bad to say about Dave Roth. This is his post on Blue Sky on November 29th. So I think as we were getting close to the thing ending, but not ending. I shouldn't have to know what Lane Kiffin is or isn't doing. I have a lot of problems of my own and live in the Northeast. Get it together, dude.
Okay. The reason I have steered this conversation into these little anecdotal moments mm-hmm. is to try to pull a little bit of a false flag. Surely the Lane Kiffin-isms that we're talking about yes, are right. unique to Lane
right.
Kiffin.
Sorry, I forgot where we were. Yeah,
I forgot what show we were yeah. doing or what day it is. Yeah. We're recording I'm a doing lot so well. This week.
Mm-hmm.
You're wrong. You are wrong. Actually, I set the premise up. So yeah.
I also know
yeah,
from
you've also seen the show outline of this episode.
Well, I also know from personal experience that you're wrong, at least personal fandom experience.
We're going to get to that one last. I just wanted to go in reverse
That's
chronological
fine.
Order.
Yeah.
Okay. September 14th, 2023. This is a USA Today report. The reporter's name is Justin Martinez. Do you know where I'm headed?
I do, but again, only because I've seen the show notes. Sorry.
I wonder if everyone else does, too. When this Lane Kiffin thing happened, again, I instantly knew he was making it up because he is Lane Kiffin. The details that I have already described as to like his phraseology just made it sound false. And then I immediately thought of Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley, I would say in many ways, one might argue, is a poor man's Lane Kiffin. And that ain't a compliment. A pejorative compliment, if such a thing exists? I'm not sure. Lincoln Riley fled,
left-handed
absconded,
compliment, I think is what we call it, right?
Very left-handed, yeah, like okay. as left-handed as I am.
Yeah. Sorry to lefties, by the way. I'm sorry that we've, like, even the word sinister is used against you. What a bummer.
Well, we might not have a soul. We're like gingers.
Yeah.
Lincoln Riley's, police give details on Lincoln Riley's claim that Oklahoma fans tried to break into his house. This is the one I immediately got giddy about because back in a previous life when I worked at Vox Media, I wrote a secret-based video about Lincoln Riley. And of all the things that Lincoln Riley's been accused of or said or sort of had a bad public performance in relation to, the one that always made me roll my eyes the most is this claim that there are multiple people tried to break into his home in Norman, Oklahoma.
The purge.
After, yeah, the purge. After he decided, or the strangers.
Yeah, sure. Any number of Home Alone, for God's sake.
I like the idea of the strangers, but they're wearing home field gear, so they're not anonymous.
I don't think home field wants
Shopping home
that
field. I'm a good corporate partner. This idea that, in case you didn't know, in 2021, Lincoln Riley, head coach at Oklahoma, successor to the mighty Bob Stoops.
Yeah. Successful coach there, too.
Yep. There's Heisman's there. Says he's going to leave to become the head coach at Southern California,
yeah.
USC. All right. There was an interview specifically with Graham Bensinger. This is, I don't know anything about the Graham Bensinger show. I just know that it's always on during a rain delay when I'm trying to watch a baseball game. So I think it's syndicated.
Please continue.
That really tickled you. I'm throwing shade on syndication rights.
No,
that
I just,
one got
I just
you?
Didn't. I just didn't.
Okay. Well, he was on the Graham Bensinger show.
Yeah.
And I've watched a clip of this since. But he claimed on this talk show, which is sort of like a soft, like for those of you who are a certain age, you'll remember like the Barbara Walters interview.
Sure.
It's not exactly getting grilled by Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty soft touch, which is why you're able to float bullshit like the following. Riley claimed there were multiple break-in attempts at his Norman residence following his announcement on November 28th, 2021, that he was leaving Oklahoma for USC. Quote, I had a lot of different people trying to break into the house the days after it happened, Riley said. And 95% of the fans and people out there at Oklahoma or anybody else are great. You typically always have that percentage that at times takes it too far. Obviously, this was one of those instances. This claim gets made on the Graham Bensinger show. And you can go, we'll provide a link when this show goes up of the video I wrote, because one of the really interesting developments is that Lincoln Riley was very much in a Lane Kiffin predicament of, uh-oh, it turns out being a psychopathic, megalomaniacal, self-centered, I don't know, just at wraith of a human being
mm-hmm.
is good to win football games, but is bad for my public image. and I should be aware of this. I don't know if Lane Kiffin's about to do what Lincoln Riley did after 2021, but Lincoln Riley decided that he just wouldn't stop talking.
Right.
I wrote about this in the
video.
Unless
it was to the press.
Well, no, but that's the weird thing. He goes out. Do you remember the Players Tribune, which I think now is not no longer in existence?
Yeah, I certainly remember what it is, yeah.
He writes this big, long essay that fucking nobody asked for about the greatness of Oklahoma and his fans and all this stuff as he is the USC head coach. And if you read it, it just reiterates all the things that pissed off Oklahoma fans who are not used to losing a coach to anywhere, right? Historically. And they're just like, "Why? This is an apology?" So basically, imagine receiving a letter after someone leaves you for like another lover and is just like, "Look, you're a great person. We had such a great time together. But do you know how hot this new chick is?" This is the Players Tribune article, basically, in a nutshell. He then goes on, does a lot of media. This is also a byproduct of moving to the number two media market in the United States from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And what we've learned since then is that Lincoln Riley doesn't really have a good relationship with the media and doesn't really have the sensitivity level necessary to deal with a large media market. He got all futzy and threw out a reporter, Luca Evans is his name, from practice. He banned him for basically doing his job and then had to unban him. But anyway, I'm talking out of chronology here. Lincoln Riley spends his first offseason, the transition between Oklahoma and USC, he just does not stop talking. He keeps doing interviews. And all of it keeps pissing people off, mainly at Oklahoma, not surprisingly, okay? I should also mention Caleb Williams, Heisman-winning quarterback, leaves Oklahoma and goes to USC. That was a little bit of a detail there that why they're like, oh, extra pissed,
right?
You had a future Heisman winner leave your team with your coach to go win a Heisman in another school.
Yes, very early in, like, this is a thing that happens with the portal. I don't think it would be as...
It's the earliest example of a star player.
Leaving with a coach? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. It's certainly the most significant.
Yeah.
I know another example is out there somewhere, like a lower level. Caleb Williams is in line to win the Heisman, which he eventually did, and left Oklahoma, who had major aspirations, obviously, national title aspirations, just like USC, and then he went to USC.
Right.
So it was a brutal gut punch for Oklahoma fans, which maybe don't write a what you think is a loving essay to Oklahoma in the Players Tribune and then just constantly talk about why I left because USC is so beautiful. Again, this is a real thing. You can look it up. So, you know, I'm projecting here. I'm just assuming.
On this show, no.
I'm just assuming I know what's going on in Lincoln Riley's beautiful mind because they're all such complicated creatures, these college football head coaches. They're just enigmas wrapped in riddles. So anyways, this peckerhead decides that he needs to engender a little support for himself, and so he spins up this yarn basically that, again, strangers, purge, however you want to, you know, people are just randomly left and right like a fucked up college football home alone trying to penetrate his Norman home. Mm-hmm. Guess what, Ryan? Didn't happen. Let's go back to this USA Today report. According to the Norman Police Department, there were no reports filed in the months of November, December 2021, but two service calls were made on December 17th and 19th by someone at the Riley residence, which is located, and I'm not going to read that off. There's no reason to. The incident report cited suspicious activity, and the caller claimed that a black Escalade kept driving by the house. Okay. I'm glad that you did your little song and dance, lawyerly as you are, at the beginning. Yes, people cross the line and fandom all the time.
Yep.
Do I doubt that a car kept driving around the neighborhood where Lincoln Riley lived in Oklahoma? No, because it was reported to the police. And usually when you give a statement to the police, it's not exactly the same as testifying in court or swearing out an affidavit. But
it is emphasized that truthfulness is important.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You don't usually want to lie to the police. So... the reason why we know no one tried to break into the house is that it would have been in the fucking report. Again, this was someone I asked people in law enforcement. They said, no, you wouldn't omit that at all. You would immediately, just for insurance purposes alone, show proof that there had been entry into the home. That never happened because no one broke into the house, Lincoln. He got carried away. He was doing an interview on that weird Graham Bensinger show, and he got a little hyperbolic, okay? He fabricated a little bit. He embellished a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This happens. So now we have a trend here. Okay? There are a ton of similarities so far between the situation with Lincoln Riley, the situation with Lane Kiffin. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's really rooted in what I think is a genuine shock I really do, Ryan, think it's a genuine shock that their decision to completely walk out on a fan base or to change schools or to abandon this commitment as the most popular and prominent figure in these small communities, they're genuinely shocked that this is received negatively. Stunning,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in a weird way, it's a little bit relatable, I think. Like, I think there is something to the idea of nobody likes the feeling of I'm being criticized for what I think was a good and fair decision. Like, I don't think these... I do think there is an element of, like, wait a second. This is a business and people leave all the time and, like, why am, yeah. Why am I being singled out? Why am I in trouble here?
The stance most people take in this scenario is that unless you're a fan of one of the schools that, mm-hmm. that have been left in this, like Oklahoma or Ole Miss. Yeah, that happens. This is college football.
Yeah, I also think if you're a coach, part of you probably thinks like, and this is probably more true of Lincoln Riley than it was of Lane, certainly Lane at Ole Miss. I'm sure some part of Lincoln Riley's mind was like, well, shit, I heard about like how all y'all wanted me out anyway, how I couldn't win the big game, how I couldn't win a playoff game and how, you know, whatever. So, like, why are you mad that I am leaving?
I don't really have an issue with anything that Lincoln Riley did or that anything that Lane Kiffin did. I think I fall in the majority opinion here, which is do what you're going to do, viva la capitalism, but don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Yeah, sure.
And this weird need to engender sympathy for oneself by fabricating obvious nonsense, that's one thing. Just don't involve the law, because there's a way to trace the veracity of those claims. These are public institutions. You can request. Now, if there's an ongoing investigation, you can't just call
sure.
up the police department and ask.
Yeah. But also the police department will, like, law enforcement at that point will say, hey, we can't give you, like we can't fully respond to this because we have ongoing work going taking place.
Okay, this next example is sort of the birth of this type of situation,
sure.
except this one doesn't connect quite as cleanly to the plight that Lincoln Riley and Lane Kiffin found themselves in from a PR standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about the 2017 Florida football season?
Gosh. I mean, I know it's a Jim McElwain season. This is the year where Florida ends up parting ways with Jim McElwain right around the Georgia game, if memory mm-hmm. serves. But I don't know that I could recall. If I had to guess, let's see. Florida beats Tennessee this year. I think that game would have been in Knoxville, and I think it probably would have been stupid.
Yeah.
I feel confident saying those things.
One of the things that happened in 2017 is that Kevin Sumlin was the head coach at Texas A&M.
Uh-huh.
And he received a piece of racist hate mail that his wife put on social media.
Okay.
To show what they were dealing with
right.
as Texas A&M was struggling.
Yeah.
And again, it is important to add the context that these things do happen.
Yeah.
I'm curious if Jim McElwain was sort of inspired or just, again, got caught up in the moment and his mouth moved faster than his brain. I want to read to you a report from ESPN.com. It's October of 2017. Alex Scarborough is the writer. Florida football coach Jim McElwain revealed Monday that his family and players have received death threats amid the program's 3-3 start. And here's the quote. There's a lot of hate in this world and a lot of anger, and yet it's freedom to show it. The hard part is obviously when the threats are against your own players and the death threats to your family, the ill will that's brought upon out there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is not an answer to a question after this information has been made public.
Yeah.
What happens, and I want the context is very important here. He's at his weekly news press conference. The Gators are 3-3. There's a ton of stress on McElwain because he's just not getting it done.
Yep.
He invokes there in that moment for the first time that he's received death threats.
Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, this took the university and the athletic department by surprise. Like, this was the first time they had heard anything about it was in this press conference.
Which, again, this is not so much relying on law enforcement sources. This is also just knowing about college sports. That's not how these things happen.
Yeah, sure.
That's not how these things happen. Even in a situation like Sumlin's, who is a black head coach, if you didn't know, where you might be somewhat at odds or your relationship might be cooling with the university. A&M was aware of it. Mm-hmm. They decided to make it public. That was their decision to do so as their sort of it was part of their methodology of coping with the threat.
Yeah.
This was different. This was him kind of running on in a sentence and talking about that really what he was addressing ultimately was the 3-3 start and the dissatisfaction.
And fan negativity surrounding.
Yeah, the dissatisfaction of the Florida fan base.
Sure.
The athletic department, the university, and Florida's not small press corps. Like, that's a pretty well-staffed beat.
Yeah.
All suddenly say to themselves the same thing, which is, what death threats? And again, when a public figure talks about receiving death threats, there's usually some form of formal engagement of law enforcement.
Yeah, sure.
Universities like Florida have a university police department. Mm-hmm. Campus police that operates in cooperation with, but technically outside of and with an independent jurisdiction of a county or city that they live in, right?
Yep.
It's the first and easiest place to access this information for confirmation. Did this happen? Did this occur? Now, they may have not, and maybe if the death threats were technically received at home, whether they were electronic or not, that would fall into the purview of where you received the death threat.
Sure.
So that could be Gainesville. What's the county?
Alachua.
Yeah, I knew it was something funny. Yeah, Alachua. Okay. Problem is, we don't know of any of this.
Yeah,
and it's mentioned as an aside. This automatically makes McElwain responsible for elaborating on what death threats.
Mm-hmm.
He would not go into detail. I'm now reading back into the story from Scarborough. McElwain would not go into detail about the nature of the threats, but he said they are, quote, testament to what's going on out there nationally. Okay, that's a rephrasing of the trope, the world today.
Yeah, sure.
Again, not mm-hmm. good, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we live in a world, like society. A lot of angry people, he said. In this business, we're the ones that you take shots at. That's the way it is. Asked how serious the threats were, McElwain said he was not planning to contact law enforcement. A spokesman for the University of Florida Police Department said they had not received any information regarding threats made against McElwain, his family, or his players.
Right.
If it's the players, that's a whole other kid in caboodle.
Sure.
Some of these kids are minors. Some of these kids are more or less employees of the university, depending on how that would play out in court if there was a civil suit. These kids have their own set of individual rights.
Mm-hmm.
There's privacy laws involved. All of that would have to be disclosed through the proper channels, through the Title IX office, I believe, at a public university. Jim, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Jim doesn't want to get into details. Okay? The university at the time said, the University Athletic Association takes the safety of our student athletes, coaches, and staff and family very seriously. Spokesman said, our administration met with Coach McElwain this afternoon, and he offered no additional details. And this is really when it became a story. Because Florida had to do their due diligence here. They can't just sit, they can't operate with the same sort of rash claim and then ambiguous dismissal, non-factual response. The university is a public institution.
Yeah.
Again, often responsible for the well-being of minors and their students. They have to vet this out.
It's it's not even necessarily a UF and other schools like them want to do their best to maintain it. It's like, no, you don't want to get sued. If something bad happened, or if something like, if somebody, you know, was getting stalked or harassed in a way and you knew about it and weren't doing anything about it, like, that's at a minimum bad press for you. And why would you do that?
What I can tell you about this story is that off the record, in confidence, on background, after the fact, Florida was super fucking pissed at Jim McElwain.
Yes.
This was not something that was handled correctly. And this is something that many individuals at the University of Florida felt like was either a wild exaggeration, an embellishment, or an outright fabrication. Because they had to clean up the mess in that instance. In the instance of, let's go back to Lane Kiffin for a second. And you can use the Riley example as well. That's a claim made absent of anything that's occurring within the university in terms of their employees or something that's happening on their campus or something that they're responsible for. I did find it ironic that like the way that Lane Kiffin even told the story was like it didn't happen on university grounds, it happened in Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
which is why, like any good reporter would, Mississippi Today in this instance just called up the state officials because was it a state highway? What, you know, who had jurisdiction? What was going on? In this case, it was even simpler because Lane's such a dumbass and has such a lack of social intelligence that he forgot the claim he was making happened when he was under police escort, which means all you have to do is contact the police for a statement there.
Yeah.
If there was an incident, so let's go back now to Lane for a second. If there was an incident where, like, I'm thinking of, like, the Juarez scene in Sicario, okay?
If it's going to happen, it's going to be right on the border, right before we get to the Oxford Airport. That's when the SAE house is going to ram us and try and shoot us like a drug cartel.
The police would have to have a record of any incident occurring, not to mention the fact that, guess what? State police in Mississippi, and I know this for a fact on both sides of the law, they have dash cams. They have body cams. So, outright fabrication, super easy to dismiss, okay? Lincoln Riley situation, let's say gross exaggeration of what probably was a call for a suspicious car. No entry into the house, no evidence thereof. Nothing divulged from Riley's party. I also forgot to add one thing. The local police, I read the final police report from Norman. After Riley said this, multiple media outlets called Riley and USC to follow up. Because again, this is news. This is huge news in the state of Oklahoma, at least.
Like, to go back to...
If you're a reporter in Tulsa or Oklahoma City or Norman, you're like, they did what?
To go back to the original... Like, think about Marty Smith waiting and waiting and waiting in Oxford for some news to develop. So much media was present for Lane Kiffin making his final decision. It's unthinkable that if somebody had tried to run him off the road, that the media and like the governmental apparatus of Oxford would not have been all over it, knowing that this is going to be a major story.
Oh, this is going to be terrible. We're going to have to deal with this.
100%.
Let's get in front of it.
Yes. And like, because if it had actually happened, the thing Lane Kiffin probably wanted would have worked. I think if somebody had actually tried to attack Lane Kiffin with their car, it would have been like, well, this just goes to show you that he made the right choice.
Now he's
going to the sane embrace of Baton Rouge.
This is why people believe that the Pennsylvania assassination attempt on Donald Trump was a false flag operation.
Boy, I didn't think we'd get into that one, too.
It's the same logic. Well, he got nicked in the ear. Of course he did. That way he could burnish his reputation, make himself a victim, and galvanize his base. Do you remember, if I say mustard bottle, and we're talking about college football, where does your mind go?
It goes back to Knoxville.
Right.
It goes back to Neyland Stadium.
Lane Kiffin made his first return to Neyland Stadium as an opposing head coach when he came in with Ole Miss in 21?
That sounds right.
Whatever.
Some, around there, yeah.
And fans threw a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
Golf balls, they yelled. But one thing that made it all the way down to the field was a French's mustard bottle.
I think so, yeah.
That obviously came from...
Apologies if it's a different mustard company and we're not giving you the shine.
Gouldens is going to come after us.
That's right.
I wish it was Bijan's Bijan. That's the only positive thing I can say about the Falcons this year is that Bijan has his own mustard. Someone grabbed... It's the exact size that would be sitting out at the little concession, like pagoda, little vestibule or whatever you want to call it, where you're like, oh, I bought a hot dog. I'm going to do the neon green relish, and I'm going to get some ketchup and mustard. And if you're a fancy stadium, I don't know where Neyland stands on this, although the Appalachians are famously flavorless, you got some chopped onions too. That's about the depth of which you can take a hot dog inside of a stand. But rather than have the pump system, they clearly had a thing where you just pick up the ketchup bottle, you pick up the mustard bottle.
Sure.
And some ruffian youth attempting to assassinate Lane Kiffin thought, well... I'm sitting on the visiting side.
Let fly the mustard of war.
It's all about the plant leg when you throw. Every quarterback coach in the world will tell you that. It's your plant leg and your torque, okay?
Sure.
Power comes from your core,
all
right? Wouldn't be shocked if they weighed the bottle down. That's another big thing. That's why plastic bottles became in vogue in America.
You think it was thrown or punted?
Ooh, based on the steepness of the decks at Neyland Stadium.
Yeah, it is pretty steep up there.
Thrown.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want anybody to actually go through a punting motion you're hopping on one foot, or you might go ass over tea kettle for about 30 rows.
Okay, that's fair. Good point.
So someone threw a mustard bottle at Lane Kiffin in a 2021 football game. What did Lane Kiffin do? He picked up the mustard bottle and used it as a prop in the post-game interview after Ole Miss beat Tennessee.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised that's not, like, auctioned off somewhere.
It might be.
Yeah. If you're the Ole Miss fan who owns an autographed mustard bottle from Lane Kiffin, let us know.
Or Vol.
Or Vol. Either one.
So, had this actually occurred, and I'm going to go in order here in terms of believability.
Yeah. Did we get to Matt Baker's investigations about McElwain as well?
No. I didn't think we needed to invoke it after the Florida statement.
I think it is useful that Matt Baker, who currently of The Athletic, at the time was working for the Tampa Bay Times, filed an open records request
with
federal and local authorities and also with the university, and reported that there were no death threats or any angry notes at all, according to what he got. And he instead cited several positive or encouraging notes from fans and alumni. So it wasn't even like Matt found, like, well, okay, here's something, and, like, I guess if you really read it, you know, it's not like he's exaggerating mm-hmm. it. To the contrary, according to what Matt Baker got, it was like, there's nothing here, at least in terms of, like, documents,
okay.
In terms of email.
I'm kind of glad you brought that back up.
Yeah.
In my notes, I was just like, to me, it's very emphatic on the University of Florida statement of, like, we didn't find anything on what this fucking guy's doing. By the way, the end of that individual story is that he won one more game that season, then he got fired at 4-7.
Yeah. It also, the university was very clear that, like, we've asked him about it, and he won't talk more.
Yeah.
Which was wild.
Jim's in his room pouting right now. So the reason why I'm happy you brought that up, I said that I told you before we turned the mics on that I was going to end this with a personal anecdote. And this is my cautionary tale to anybody, because I used to, on like the radio football speaker circuit thing in my career, you got to have good stories. You got to have like banger stories, anecdotes, like comedic stories you can tell, almost like a comedian, with football fans. And I have one that I've used a lot, and I've used it with coaching staffs, especially if I have to spend a couple days with coaching staffs to warm them up, because mm-hmm. coaches love this story. Mm-hmm. When we made foul play, and when I was writing the Crooked Letters piece yeah. about the saga of the Ole Miss Mississippi State NCAA investigation, I came across a message board post. And I don't even want to say which message board it was, because I can't remember anymore. And I've also had to go back and try to find it. At the time, there was this thing that was connected to scout.com called Jeans Page. There was also an offshoot of Jeans Page, which were people that were banned from that page, called the Six Pack. And then there were people that were banned from the Six Pack called Elite Dogs. Mississippi State's online community, you're all a fucking gem. I love you so much.
It's like the history of Catholicism.
They have in the past photoshopped fake tweets of mine. Yeah. They have done all sorts of wonderful things in the name of proving my bias for my alma mater, which yeah. if anyone has followed me in any segment of my professional career, talk about barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah.
And you were there for aspects of foul play and Crooked Letters, and how absolutely disgusted in totality I was with the state of Mississippi, both schools, both institutions, and remain that way to a large degree. But anyway, at the time, Mississippi State was convinced that I was on the take from Ole Miss. Mississippi State fans were convinced that I was on the take from Ole Miss because I was rightfully pointing out the corruption inside the NCAA, and I was correct on that, but that it was helping Ole Miss's case with the Committee on Infractions, and that I was actually in cahoots with Hugh Freeze. Again, so
your
logical,
close
this
personal
story.
Friend.
My buddy. My buddy. And one of these message boards, I can't remember which, and I've tried to go back and find this post to use for comedic effect, said something to the fact of like, well, who is this MF or Godfrey, da 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 da. And another person says, he went to Ole Miss, and he's based in Nashville, which that's in my author bio.
Can confirm.
That's in my author bio.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. And then another person says, no, I've got a listing for him here in, and then they name this town in Mississippi, which is where my parents live.
Okay.
So most of you know this. I'm, again, not really divulging anything, a state secret here. I'm Junior.
Mm-hmm.
My full name, Junior, yeah. is my father's name.
Sure. That's how, yep.
Yeah, that's how it works.
That's how Junior usually works.
That's how it works.
Not always, but usually.
So if you...
Oh, I wish you were a Chip.
Oh, God. I've had that conversation. I neglected to keep this thing going when I had two sons, and my dad was pissed.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't going to name him Trip.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am junior. My father is senior. My father loves Mississippi. Originally from Georgia. Also loves Ole Miss, man. Fucking loves it. Loves it so much. He did not go to an SEC school. He and my mom were delighted when my sister and I went to the same SEC school. They could pull for an SEC school. They had like one. And then like my sister, I guess, cares, whatever. But I obviously moved into sports journalism and put all that aside. Here's what I'm getting at. Someone on this message board is like, oh, there's a Stephen Godfrey that's listed here in this particular town, smaller town in Mississippi where my parents retired to on a lake. And I've told this story before as receiving a threat, which is incorrect. All they did was a sort of pseudo-doxing.
Sure, yeah.
And so I have to be very careful. But the funny story is that I had to then, and Ryan can attest, and we don't need to put this on the audio today, I was not in the most healthy place of my life when we were finishing up these stories.
I would agree.
Because I had to deal with a multitude of problems internally and externally, both the investigation, but then also the TV production we had fell apart. Out of my power, thanks Fox Media. And on top of all that, not sleeping, I had one newborn, I just renovated a home. I mean, literally every combination stressor you could have in your life. I thought I was going to have to actually check into like a facility. At one point I had these hives all over me, there's a whole other thing. There's a funny story that I guess we'll tell patrons one time if we raise a certain amount of money or something for charity, just someone... someone remind us one day if you want a stretch goal for a charity that Steven will tell the Jennifer Garner story. You didn't think I would put that on the microphone, did you? I had a psychotic break where I started talking about Jennifer
we
Garner.
We might have to bring my
it's not
wife
romantic.
In for that.
It's not it's the actually opposite of romantic. It's a very weird moment, but I was we were editing the show. We were behind deadline. Anyways, I was not in a good place. And I get this thing. Someone found it and sent it to me in Slack at work about like the though they know they're all this your parents.
Yeah.
So this is the part of the story where I confide that I've again you guys know I was raised by cops, but I was also raised by rednecks, more or less. They can dress it up, they can tone it down, they can shave the ion gliding down a little bit in their accent. But Ryan, your parents, for instance, let's just hold this in your mind's eye without describing them on audio.
Okay.
If you had to call your parents and say, someone has found your home address, mm-hmm. and I need to make you aware of this. Mm-hmm. I think they might receive it, process it, and discuss it a little differently than my father did.
Yes, I think that's an accurate statement.
So I have to call my father, who at the time is, I think he had officially retired from the FBI. He was working cold cases for the state. And I called him up and I said, hey, Dad, get Mom on the phone. Da-da-da. Okay, listen, these people live on the message board. They're mentioning that you guys live in this town. Da-da-da-da. It's like it's kind of like a white pages lookup. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm really sorry about this, but would you like to talk to anybody about, like, I'm going to do my due diligence with Vox Media, my employer, and say, like, I've contacted my family. Would you, like, we could talk to local law enforcement? And that's when he cuts me off and he goes, boy, what the fuck are you talking about? He goes, let me tell you something. You're out here moping the fuck around, talking about getting a fucking death threat. He goes, you're the one who decided to work in journalism. As you can tell, coming from a long line of Southern police officers, how blown away and excited and over the moon they happy they were that I went into journalism. That I work for the Washington Post, for instance, okay?
Yep.
Boy, you want to stir all this shit for a living, and then you start getting your feelings hurt when it stinks. That's what he told me. And I was like, what lecture is happening right now? And he goes, if you're going to make your bed, you're going to lie in it. You want to do stuff that pisses people off, you better be prepared when they get pissed off at you. And I'm like, okay, all right. By the way, I'm like 30 fucking five at this point. I'm not a child.
This is the scene they cut from All the President's Men, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where Bob Woodward's redneck dad goes, hey, you got a death threat? That's your fucking fault.
Dick
being an asshole.
Dick Nixon's a good man, and you're a piece of shit.
Why are you being such a prick to everybody? Hey, you think Hugh Freeze is going to be here next year?
Like you never broke into a hotel.
So I'm getting lectured by my father for essentially having, I guess, the correct sociological emotional response to what I perceive as a threat.
Yeah.
And then that's when he goes on one of the greatest monologues in the world. This is why every redneck football coach loves this story when I tell it. He goes, Boy, it would make me, nothing would make me happier in this world if some peckerheaded Mississippi State Bulldog fan decided to walk up my driveway starting to try and talk shit about your dumb ass or me or your mama. Anybody wants to threaten me, they wouldn't get two steps up the fucking driveway before they turned into Swiss goddamn cheese. Which, to this redneck's credit,
yeah,
it is an armory at my parents' house. My father was a firearms instructor and a SWAT tactical shooter. He was in the rafters of the Superdome after 9/11 when the FBI, when there was so much more police and military presence and people realized that Super Bowl after 9/11. That part is true.
I can confirm that my California-born father would not have this reaction.
Would not have had this reaction.
No.
Your dad probably, your dad who's a doctor would have been like, oh, wow, this is upsetting. We should probably talk to someone about this. My dad was absolutely incensed that it didn't happen.
Yeah, sure.
He wanted stand your ground law. He goes, I'd make sure that he's just far enough up the fucking driveway where I could drag the body out and that'd be that. He goes, so if any one of them motherfuck da 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 da, I'm going to kind of blend through some of the profanity there since it might not be the most PC shit in the world. Basically, he then went on a tirade about, I hope it happens so I can murder another sports fan and drag the body onto our property. This story kills amongst football coaches for some reason, mainly because it involves redneck fans and also my conservative dad dressing down a member of the media who's also his son and his namesake.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, this is big with the MAGAs, let me tell you. My point of this story is I had to rephrase this a couple years ago because I started thinking about McElwain and Riley and now Lane Kiffin, where I'm like, yeah. I don't need to claim that I got doxxed or that there was a threat made upon me. It was just one dickhead on the internet who got a little too close and did a 411 search, which used to be a thing,
yeah,
on my name in Mississippi. So no, I would never say that, like, well, these Mississippi State fans, they were trying to kill me or all this kind of, yeah. Like, that's the difference in the hyperbole.
Yeah.
And I want to take this moment to apologize to my father that no one from whatever Mississippi State message board it was followed through and tried to breach your compound so you could kill them. I'm sorry. Thank you for supporting Phantom Island journalism.
Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber. Our theme song is also called Phantom Island from the album of the same name by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.